VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, sales of my new book, All in the Same Boat, continue to exceed my expectations, so thank you to all of those who have placed your orders. I really appreciate it. We're going to continue to take pre-orders until May 15th, so get your pre-order in. And just as a reminder, there will be more than 80 prizes given away when we do our live book launch. So this is something I want to do a little bit differently, and I talked about it last podcast, so just a reminder, there's going to be more than 80 prizes given away during the live book launch, and the grand prize is this gorgeous hand-carved custom American wooden flag from the Sasquatch Flag Company. This thing's gorgeous. I don't have one myself, but I'm excited that I'm going to give one away. I'm probably going to purchase one on my own as well to have here in the podcast studio. So that's the grand prize. Other prizes include coffee from the Bottom Gun Coffee Company. We got coffee mugs from Coda Vets, bourbon glasses. Of course, everybody needs a bourbon glass from Sailors and Sticks. We have challenge coins, which are actually bottle openers from Test Depth. And we also have other books. So The Uncomplicated Coach by Neil Woodson, we're going to be giving away 5 of those. And we're going to be giving away 50 books by John Brubaker called The Coach Approach. So these all these prizes will be given out in the live book launch. And you're only eligible to get these prizes if you order a book during the pre-order period, which ends on May 15th. So I encourage you to get out there and get your copy of this book. It's at allinthesameboatbook.com. So get out there, get your pre-orders in, and I guarantee this will be the most interesting leadership book you will read in 2021. I spent more than 2 years writing this book, and it's filled with 50 stories from my days on the USS Tennessee as a submarine officer, and then how I took those lessons I learned and applied them into running 9 different manufacturing businesses across my career. So if you were looking for a very interesting, really different leadership book and one that you can, you know, capture some ideas from a different industry and bring them into your industry, this is your book. So I encourage you to go to allinthesameboatbook.com and get your order in before May 15th. So time's running out. Get your book and get your opportunity to get one of these prizes. So as a reminder, the best way to support this show is to continue to support my sponsors, bottomguncoffee.com and ihavethewatch.com. And if you use the discount code DEEP at checkout for both of these websites, you will get a discount. Well, that's it for all the pre-show ritual. Today, my guest is Karen Reed. Karen is an Emmy Award-winning on-camera communications expert. She trains leaders to communicate better, especially in remote meetings and presentations. She has a new book out called Suddenly Virtual, which guides leaders on how to get the most out of online communications. You know, I think at this point, everybody thinks they're an expert on Zoom, but there's so much more to Zoom than we realize, and Karen helps us unpack those ideas. This was a powerful interview and a very timely interview. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Karen Reed. Karen is a 2-time author and on-camera communications expert. She is CEO of Speaker Dynamics. where she helps business professionals become more effective on-camera communicators. Her new book, Suddenly Virtual, Making Remote Meetings Work, is the definitive guide for businesses looking to make their meetings more effective in this increasingly remote working environment. I'm excited to have her on the show to talk about this important leadership topic. So Karen, welcome to the show.
John, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
And I am looking forward to it as well, because this is such a timely topic and this is such a timely book. And I understand it just came out. It's been out for a month now. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so far, so good. Sales are going well, and a lot of people are finding value in it. We got some nice reviews. You know, it's always a bit anxiety-inducing to get a review, but they sure said nice things. So, you know, that was great to see.
That's great. And I'm excited for you. I'm excited about this book. And again, it's the perfect book for the time we're in right now. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about your background and then what you do at Speaker Dynamics.
Okay, absolutely. I'll give you the executive summary of why I do what I do, why I'm
right
in this position. So I began my career as a broadcast journalist,
okay,
worked primarily for NBC, interviewed luminaries like Muhammad Ali,
wow,
won an Emmy along the way.
Wow.
And then I left the business actually in 2004 to apply my skills in the corporate world. And what I found is that I would be hired as the professional on-camera spokesperson, but then they'd pull somebody in from the corner office or the corner cubicle and expect them to perform on camera at the same level of skill as I did with no training.
Right.
And I thought, okay, for one thing, that's patently unfair because it requires a different skill set to communicate to a camera. And it also is not a good thing for your corporate brand or their personal brand. So I wanted to fill that skill gap. And so I created Speaker Dynamics about a decade ago to do
wow
just that. So wrote a book called On Camera Coach, which encompasses the methodology of on-camera communication. And as you can imagine, over the past year, on-camera communication skills have become mission critical for so many people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you never knew that you'd be in this world where everything went virtual, but suddenly you're here.
Yeah. And you know, but I did see a trend where people were using video more and more often, and the people
right
who were in front of the camera were the decision makers, the doers. They were not the professionals, like you see sometimes on commercials. These are real people. You know, that's true. That's what people want to see. So with that in mind, I wanted to help people feel more comfortable and confident, because even if you are a very confident public speaker, have no problem addressing a crowd in person, if you put them in front of a camera lens, sometimes they are reduced to a puddle of sweat. And that's not fair. Let me help you to be able to break through that, because
right,
you know, I feel like my mission is get all the brilliance inside people's heads out of their mouths and into the world. And so whatever I can do to give them confidence to do that is what I try to do.
No, that's really important. I know I worked in corporate America for years. I was in senior management positions, and we went to crisis communication training, and they actually had reporters and camera crews come in and, you know, ask us questions. And, you know, you get that deer in the headlight look when you see
sure
that camera in front of you the first
yeah
time. And
yeah,
and I think it was really powerful. So we had someone similar to you helping us learn how to communicate in a crisis. And that was really one of the most important trainings I ever went through in my entire career. So it's really important.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's funny, because a lot of people who leave the broadcast journalism career end up going into crisis communications. But
oh,
honestly,
yeah,
John,
yeah,
that really wasn't that interesting to me.
Right.
Because you know, I do feel like I'm doing what my life's purpose is. I think I've been a cheerleader, you know, all my life for other people, just to help them to be raised up. And whenever you're doing crisis communications, it's more like playing defense. You know, I wanted to put people in a position where they could play offense, but in a positive way. You know,
I like that.
Your ideas out there. And, you know, so it's communicating through a camera rather than trying to like push the camera back and say,
right.
So it's kind of a distinction that I saw an interest in, you know, pretty early on, just because, you know, there are so many different media channels and everybody was filling it, but they were filling it not that well.
Yeah.
So being able to empower people to use this really powerful medium, you know, I think is, you know, something that was necessary and needed 10 years ago. It's imperative now.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my next question. So, you know, in the past year, career, if you look at the kind of clients or the customers that you would interface with, what have been the changes in the past year with the things that they're coming to you and asking for help? What's been the change in focus?
It's a dramatic change in our business, for sure. Literally, in the month of March 2020, our business tripled. So we went training the executive leadership team to training the entire enterprise. People were coming to me and saying, hey, we've got a product launch. We have to train our entire sales force how to virtually sell this. How can we do this? And that happened time and time again. So as a result, I had to figure out a way to scale up my team quickly and also come up with new ways of delivering the training. So one of the things that we've done is create an online training platform called Speaker Dynamics University.
Oh, nice.
Where people can go into this course in itself, paced, and it allows you to build skill over time, but come away with the same level of knowledge that you would if you were, for example, in one of our high touch workshops, which are, fitting about 10 people per workshop. But if you're training 800 people, that's not feasible to be able to do that in workshop form. So it's really been a great way to, scale the training and kind of give a way for people to get access to these skills, in a self-paced way.
No, I like that. That's very good. Yeah, I know. It's funny because I've had to do a lot of sales visits, customer visits virtually now, which is a bizarre thing where I would dial in and I'm trying to demo a product, holding it up and it was really interesting. I mean, they all tended to go okay, but it was definitely skill sets I've never had before, holding up a product and trying to point to the features and doing presentations, remote presentations. So definitely out of my comfort zone the past year, trying to do what I had to do with customers and with the, industry events I attended virtually. So,
one of the things that I try to impress upon people is, the camera, in my view, it's almost like a living thing. The camera is the conduit to your conversation partner. And if you interact with it as such, it can feel a lot more comfortable for you and also help you to better resonate with the person on the other side. Because sometimes people just, consider the camera lens to be this disinterested bystander, but it's not. This is the way you reach your people. So understanding how to leverage that is really key, and understanding, that it's really all about having a conversation and less about a performance. And it's actually a pretty close conversation, because you're as close to your conversation partner as your eyes to your webcam and their screen to their eyes.
Right.
So it's more like you were talking to somebody like at a trade show, for example, where you're just like across the table from them and you're demonstrating your stuff, as opposed to being up on stage and presenting like that. If you go into that, what I call presenter mode, then that at best looks inappropriate. And at worst, it can come across as like almost fake. So if you allow yourself to just remember you're having a conversation with somebody who can't see it quite as well as you want to, it can usually make you come across better.
Nice. I like that. I like that, having a conversation versus doing a presentation. I like that. It's more authentic, I would imagine. It's more like an authentic conversation.
Absolutely. And it's not a performance, because as soon as we perform, then we create all these additional barriers to our effectiveness, because suddenly we're a lesser version of ourselves.
Right.
And we want to be perfect. And when we try to be perfect, the more difficult that becomes. So let that go.
Yeah,
Allow yourself just to be genuine you.
Yeah, I love it. There's the show Dirty Jobs, Mike Rowe, you've heard of him.
Yeah.
So he says the reason their show was so successful for so many years is they did one take and that was it.
He
said there's authenticity in one take. And I think part of podcasting and what makes it special is it's a conversation, and it's sometimes, it's not a perfect, the words aren't always perfect. We're having a conversation. I think people, when they listen to those podcasts, they take more away from it because it's an authentic conversation and not something that's, it's not a one-way street. It's a two-way communication, and it's very authentic. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's the way I, even in my TV news days, I would conduct my interviews. People would say, so what are you going to ask me? I'm like, I don't know. The conversation goes because I felt like I was going to be a better listener as a result because I didn't have a planned list of things I was going to ask. And it would be more interesting for the viewer as well, because if my mind is going somewhere, their mind is probably going there as well.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that. So let's talk about Zoom. So we live in Zoom world right now, at least it feels like it in some cases. And, you know, and I think everybody would probably say that they have things they don't like about Zoom meetings and virtual meetings. But in your opinion, what are some, you know, areas, or why do you feel like video collaboration is still a really important tool that we have to use? What are the advantages, and why should we, you know, not really hate Zoom as much as we do?
Well, I mean, in some ways right now, we're still in a state where the majority of us still have to use this in order to connect, because lots of places are not open yet, you know, at least in full. So at best, we're moving into perhaps a hybrid workforce, but people who are co-located still need to talk to the people who are remote. So the only way to do that is through a video collaboration platform. It creates a lot of additional challenges for especially the facilitator of that meeting, and we can delve more into that. You know, what I would say is the whole idea of Zoom fatigue and some of the bashing, it's not the platform's fault.
Right. It's
not. It is user error and an over-reliance on using video collaboration platforms as the default for every human touch point, because it's easy, right? You know, hey, I want to talk to you. I'm just going to send you a Zoom link, or I'm going to send you a WebEx link. You know, that could possibly be something that you do via email. Maybe you send out a message over a Slack channel. Maybe it's a text. Maybe it's a phone call. Not every human touch point needs to be a video call that shows up on your calendar and just clogs up space. Because then, as I'm sure you've had the situation, John, where you're like back to back to back to back meetings all day. Yeah. And you're like, when am I ever going to get my actual real work done? And it's sapping of your energy. It's exhausting to be in this space for prolonged periods of time. Yeah. So what I would say is, use video meetings the way they should be used. Use them whenever you are trying to collaborate, when you're trying to ideate, when decisions need to be made and people all need to have a voice and you need to listen to everybody's opinions. And anything that's information sharing, think about doing it in a different modality. And sometimes that is video. You know, I'm seeing a rise in what I call asynchronous video, where, like, for example, say that you wanted to do an update, John. You record yourself in this space, deliver your message, and then you can send it off to your employees and let them watch it in their own time.
Right.
And that gives them flexibility so that they don't have to, you know, have something else specifically on their calendar. They can watch it whenever they have time, maybe even on like 2X. But, you know, so I feel like what video meetings are great for is creating that connection. It allows you to read the nonverbals. If you just do it on teleconference, that body language, which is critical.
Oh yeah, it's missed.
Read intent, it's gone. You have no way of knowing how your message is being received, right? Because you can't, like, even those subtle nods, like I can see your subtle nod, like that is an encouragement that says, okay, he's with me. I can continue on.
Right.
Delivery accordingly. And then when people are trying to, you know, read your intent of your message, if you don't have video on, that also becomes much more difficult.
I agree. That's why, you know, when I'm doing these interviews, I like to have a video on just so I can see, you know, see who I'm talking to and have that interaction. I was going to say, you know, when I worked my last job in corporate America, I was running a very large engineering team, and I had most of the team was down in Mexico, and we had regular weekly staff meetings, but I always made sure it was always with video because we were all kind of sitting around the same table, even though it was a bit of a virtual table that, you know, half the team was down there and half the team was here. But I thought that was really important that they could see my face and see how I was communicating and the intent behind the words, especially where English was a second language as well, too. So I thought it was very important that we have it as video. And I think those meetings were much more effective because we used video and not just an audio conference call.
If you have a global team and if you have non-native speakers, you need to give them the opportunity to read all of your nonverbals in addition right. to hearing what you have to say, and vice versa as well. So yeah, I think that's critical. And one of the things I wanted to mention too, John, is just as a result of these virtual meetings, you know, there has been more even participation that we've observed across the board, because everybody shows up in a very egalitarian way. Everybody's box is the same size. There's no hiding, you know, in the back of the room.
Right.
And so a skilled facilitator will be able to draw out participation from everybody across the board. And even, you know, using the chat function allows people to participate in a less intimidating way too. And then that can be equally valued, provided that the facilitator attends to the chat and makes sure to read what's coming in and then incorporates it into the discussion. So, so there is a sense that there's a greater, you know, sense of people actually all participating, you know, rather than just a couple of people monopolizing the conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one thing I really do like about it, having done a lot of virtual training now for the past year, is that I really do like the fact that you have the chat function there. And that's something that you wouldn't normally get in a, if I'm doing a presentation in front of a bunch of students, I don't know what they're thinking, and I they could be taking notes or what have you, but the chat function is one that's very unique, because I think you almost get a sense of what the listener is, what they heard and what they're thinking about as you're talking about a particular message. And one of the things I like about it even more is that it kind of brings out the introverts. Whereas like in real world training, a lot of the introverts are quiet and they kind of sit back and they don't really say much. But with the chat function, they feel like they can just type in a little message like, you know, can you explain a little bit more about that point? And suddenly as a trainer, you've got that input quickly and you can jump on that. And I really do think the chat function is something that is actually, I don't know, it makes training, I think, more effective than less effective.
Totally agree. And it, one of the things that I try to do if I have a large group is have a chat monitor
who will be
taking a look at what's coming in. And they serve two roles. The first is to address any questions that don't need to be elevated to the group discussion, like technology challenges. I can't see you. I can't.
Right.
Or whenever you are soliciting questions, they can kind of cull those. And whenever you stop, you can say, hey, are there any questions that have come in, and they can be like, yeah, you know, Ben wants to know blah, 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 blah. And it just makes it easier for you to be able to kind of negotiate going from, you know, your verbal delivery into addressing what's going on with the text. And just, it just makes for easier facilitation.
I agree. Yeah, that's really helpful.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Is your boss a jerk?
I understand you're in the hospital, but I'm going to need you to come in today.
Do they lack any ability to actually lead people?
Oh, it's fine. I'll just find somebody else that can do it, okay?
John is offering a new service just for you. For only $10, he will anonymously mail a copy of his best-selling book, I Have the Watch, to your boss with a personal note. Go to ihavethewatch.com and enter the discount code BOSS at checkout.
Deep Leadership is brought to you by my friends at the Bottom Gun Coffee Company. Bottom Gun is owned and operated by U.S. submarine veterans, and no one knows coffee better than the men and women who serve long hours keeping watch under the sea. Bottom Gun Coffee Company has a variety of coffee blends designed to keep you moving. From Ahab's Revenge Extremely Strong Coffee to their morning blend, Bottom Gun purchases only premium certified organic coffee beans from all over the world to create the finest tasting coffee you will ever experience. It's what I drink every day. Bottom Gun is offering a discount to the listeners of Deep Leadership. Go to bottomguncoffeecompany.com and enter the discount code DEEP at checkout. Bottom Gun Coffee, the taste that's qualified. So let's talk about your book. So Suddenly Virtual. Who was it written for, and what makes this book so unique?
So I feel like it is coming at the right time. At least that's what I'm hearing. Because, you know, whenever the pandemic hit, everybody just jumped to do whatever worked.
Right.
And it wasn't necessarily what worked best. It was just, you know, emergency mode. And so now that we're over a year into this, I think people are trying to be more strategic. So our goal with this book was to make sure that it was data-based, science-based, and had best practices that were easy to implement. So my co-author is Dr. Joseph Allen, and he is one of the foremost thought leaders in meeting science. And Joe and I met because we were doing a webinar together for a mutual client on the modern meeting. Mm. And at that time, this was beginning of March 2020, we were talking about, oh, 3, 5, 10 years out, you know, there's going to be a lot of virtual meetings and video will probably be at their core. March 2020, everything, you know, went haywire, and we ended up seeing all those things that we suggested would happen in years happen in like 3 weeks. So yes. We went off to our different, you know, spheres of influence. He started doing a bunch of research on what was happening to meetings in a virtual world. I was drinking from the fire hose of people saying, please help us to do this better. And a couple months later, we kind of reconnected and realized that we were working on the same problem. And we thought, how can we amplify the message and help more people to be better at these meetings, which are going to be part of how we communicate from here on
out? Yes.
So that is kind of the origin story of the book. And it is designed to help anyone who is having to get business done through a webcam. So I know from my experience, that's pretty much everyone. But, you know, the areas of specific need would be, you know, in sales for sure, because you're trying to go from the handshake model to one where you're building relationships through this, through a piece of glass. You know, lots of work with telehealth, helping HCPs, healthcare professionals, to be able to manage interactions with their patients. You know, truly anyone in business who is trying to keep their teams, you know, cohesive whenever people are far flung. So there's so much applicability really across so many industries and verticals that I feel like there's value for it, you know, whoever, you know, picks it up.
Oh, that's great. I like the fact that it's data driven and it's science based, and that makes it unique. It's not just a you know, one person's opinion, although expert opinion, but still it's good to see things backed up with data.
Well, what was interesting in the writing process, John, is we both would take chapters and take turns being the lead author.
Okay.
And so Joe would write the first draft of the chapter, which was very science-based. And I would come in, I'd be like, oh, and I saw that happen with my client when they did blah, blah, blah. And the opposite would happen for me, where I would be the lead on a chapter and he would come in and say, and the reason why they did this is because of this, you know, science, blah, 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 you know, media richness theory. So I would call myself his color commentator.
Oh, nice.
Yes, he was the science guy. Yeah. And I'd be like, and now let me tell you a story about how this plays out. So it's actually a really great collaboration that I feel so fortunate to be a part of.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. I like that. So, you know, we talked a little bit about when we started out, we talked a little bit about having it's more of a conversation and less about a, you know, presentation. And so, you know, what are some of the barriers to effective, you know, screen communication, and how can leaders overcome them? What are some of the barriers that, you know, one of them is obviously trying to fake it or trying to be too plastic, not being authentic. So
going into the presenter mode.
Yeah. So what are some other barriers that leaders have to watch out for when they're doing this type of communication?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges that we all encountered immediately is that for the first time, we were seeing ourselves communicate in real time. And that was disconcerting and distracting, And what I would often see is people who would spend all of their time looking at themselves on the screen and monitoring their performance. And when you do that, you change the way you're coming across. Mm. So one of the recommendations that I make is to, if possible, take yourself out of the equation. On Zoom, for example, you have the opportunity to click something called hide self view.
Yes.
So click that. Don't give yourself the temptation of watching yourself, because trust me, nothing exciting is going to change. Once you have your Zoom set up, probably not going to vary too much. So just put yourself in a more typical conversational situation where you're just able to see the person that you're conversing with. Mm. So that is a big one. The other one that I see often is people are having a hard time figuring out how to adjust their delivery, because when you're talking to somebody face to face, you're constantly monitoring them to see how your message is.
Like
people are going mm-hmm and nodding along, but maybe somebody's nodding off, and then you can change what you're doing in order to try to reach them.
Right.
When you're talking to a camera, it can be much more difficult to do that. You know, you can have some nonverbals, you know, as a result of video, but you have fewer data points because you're limited by the screen. But what I would suggest is you still have to remember that if you want to speak with impact and influence, you need to be focusing your energy and your attention primarily through the camera, but you can still steal a glance down and get a quick snapshot of what people are thinking or feeling about how you're presenting. You don't need to stare at them. Like, I don't need to stare at you, John, and see if you're like smiling, or like I can look down quickly and just use the camera as or interact with the camera the way you would with a person face to face.
I like that.
You don't stare at somebody when you talk to them. You know, you glance down, you look up, you think about what you're going to say next. Consider the camera to be a face, and then actually treat it as such.
Mm. And that's hard to do. I mean, imagine you know you're actually a trained professional at this, right? You spend a lot of time looking at, you know, that little camera lens, which some of us are just doing it for the first time. Like, all right, what is that? So
right.
But you know, it's interesting. You brought up one thing, and I think I'm probably a very empathetic listener. Like I spend a lot of time talking with employees, and I really do like the face to face. And I do get a lot out of the nods and the, you know, and really paying attention to the cues, especially like when I'm doing a live presentation, I'm looking at people in the room and seeing who's paying attention. And I try to, you know, I'll push my voice a little bit more to one end of the room if I see some people nodding off or getting bored.
Right.
So, but I'm always gauging the audience. I'm really spending time looking at the audience, and are they getting it? Are they understanding? Even one-on-one discussions. And I think that is a little hard for me when I can't see, you know, or when I have like 50 squares and I can't really quite see faces are they getting through? Am I getting through to them? And are there any tips to how to best, sense how people are doing when you're seeing just a bunch of little tiny squares?
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I would recommend is, at least you're saying you're seeing squares. What I see oftentimes is people will spend the entire meeting sharing their screen. So suddenly it's not 50 squares. It's like maybe a strip, of 5 to 10. And in that situation, it's nearly impossible to read the room. So, obviously visual aids serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. They help you to convey information. However, there is oftentimes a reliance upon them, and they become visual crutches. Mm-hmm. So if you are somebody who is throwing your slide deck up for 20 minutes straight, know that that gives people ample opportunity to do something else. They're going to check out.
Yeah.
Because it's too static. So anytime I'm doing any sort of presentation, I'm constantly moving in and out of screen share. You take the slide away, and it automatically re-engages them because you've changed their virtual environment.
That's a really important tip. But something I've done a couple of training where we've done that. We've showed like three slides and we came off and we had a conversation again.
Yes.
That's a really important point that you make up, that to change the look. You're not just droning on about slide after slide after slide. You take that down, you can see their person's face again. You can engage them again. I think that's an important point.
And the key too, also, John, is that you have to move them off the default position of passive observer.
Yes.
Because that's how we have been conditioned to engage with screens. We watch TV, we watch movies, but now we want people to be active participants with screens. So what I would suggest is always be thinking about what you can get people to do. So that can be doing a short answer in chat, you know, asking a quick question. You know, I do that often where like I talk about the power of the pause and I say, you know, how many seconds do you think that pause was after the example that I just showed? And put it in chat and people will go 8, 5, the video. But they're doing something. The other thing, you know, use polls. You know, it's great for you because you get kind of a quick look at how people feel about something, but it also is getting them to do something. Voice opportunities are huge in a virtual setting. It's important in any meeting, but it's really important virtually because that's what keeps people tuned in. So for you, if you're trying to read the room, I would say, you know, do those 3 slides or less and then pop out of it and then try to start driving discussion. What I look for when I'm driving discussion is some nonverbal cues that might indicate somebody has something to say. So for example, if somebody leans toward the camera, that's usually a precursor to them saying something. Right. If somebody unmutes themselves before they even utter a word, I'm saying, hey, John, it looks like you might have something to add.
That's true.
And they
true.
Might say, Aaron, I don't have anything to say. I just hit that by accident. And that's okay. I'd rather have you err on that side than just kind of sit there in silence. Because one of the biggest challenges is you have people not knowing when it's their turn to speak. So if you proactively give them the floor, you are able to minimize that kind of stunted and stilted conversation that often occurs in a virtual setting.
That makes a lot of sense. I do see hand raises too sometimes, like you're back in elementary school, you know?
Yeah, but it works. And you can do a little emoji hand, you know, or
I've seen that as well. Yeah.
I was teaching a class today and I love this. It also helps you find them on the screen, right?
Right, right.
And then also make sure you set the expectation if you have a large group that they should identify themselves before they speak, because that way everybody can figure out, okay, where are they on the screen?
I think that's great. I mean, you've hit some of the most important points here, but you know, I really do like what you're talking about here. And when I'm thinking about best practices for meetings, as you know, we enter this post-COVID world where I think there's going to be a lot more remote work just in general, just based on what's happened in the world. And I think people are realizing, why do we even have an office? We could probably do this remote. And so I think there's going to be a lot more remote work. And so you shared some of them. Any other best practices we should be thinking about as we go into this post-COVID meeting world?
Absolutely. So the most effective meetings that we found are the ones that are shorter and more purpose-driven.
Yes.
So
I like it that. Really.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that you've applied this yourself, where you found that, you know, the meeting where you had 10 items on the agenda doesn't necessarily work that great in a virtual setting. Instead, you know, have an agenda with 2 items and actually accomplish them then give people back a little bit of time. You know, also don't let your calendar app dictate the length of your meeting by default. It may not need to be an hour.
take a
look at your agenda and then only block out the amount of time that you truly need to accomplish the task.
I love that.
And make sure the right people are in the room. Long gone are the days where you'd say, oh, you know, why don't you just come just to be a fly on the wall just in case. Meetings become very unwieldy quickly if you have too many people on the call.
Right.
So if you want to have a good discussion with everybody's voice being heard, the sweet spot is like 5 to 7 people if you want to have it end in a decision.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure there's a lot more in the book.
There is. I could talk for a long time about this, John, but I think your listeners would nod off themselves.
Right, exactly. So, so what are you working on now? What do you do with your company and with the book coming up? Like, what are you working on these days?
Well, we are so excited. We're launching, you know, the full online training portal, Speaker Dynamics University. So that was a big lift. But, you know, early response has been tremendous. So we're excited about that. There might also be another book coming down. This one has done well. And so our publisher is excited about having us collaborate again. So it likely will be focusing on managing hybrid meetings, which is a whole different animal and has a layer of complexity that is going to require a lot of thought.
Well, I understand you teach a bit at Duke University, and I know I have as well, and they do a hybrid model where you have classroom students and you have Zoom students, and it's very challenging. And that's the first time I've ever done that, and it was definitely there's a hand over here, and it's difficult as a speaker to sort of keep everyone engaged. So I think that's right. Going to be interesting.
Yeah. And you always feel like you're giving one set short shrift, right? You know, and
right.
You know, and, you know, Dr. Allen will talk about the network effect where, you know, when you introduce hybrid, you're introducing multiple networks. So when you're all meeting together in one room, that's one network. When you're all meeting virtually, that's one network. When you're meeting hybrid, you've got multiple networks because you've got maybe three people in a conference room here.
Yes.
Three people in a conference room here and five people joining virtually.
Yes.
And you have to get all of these networks to talk to each other. So that's going to require a higher level of facilitation than we've seen before. It might also require some new roles to be created. One of the things that we advocate is thinking about not just having a leader of the meeting, but having somebody who is there as a designated facilitator who does not have a stake in the outcome of the meeting, but knows enough to be able to guide the discussion. Because imagine if you're the leader who is also supposed to be the decision maker at the end, it's a lot to manage.
It is. Yeah, you know, it is.
So having somebody else who's kind of pulling out that even participation so all voices are heard is really critical so that you come with the best business outcome at the end.
I like that. That's great. That's a great idea. Yeah, I really, really thought about that. But yes, when you've got groups of people now on a conference room where some are in the same room, then there's a whole nother layer of complexity there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Wow, I love it. So how can people find out more about you, your company, and the new book?
Well, probably the best place to go is to our company webpage, which is speakerdynamics.com. Okay. You can find access to the books, to Speaker Dynamics University, all about the training that we offer. We have different modalities that we use. And just a little bit more about me and my team. And also our blog is chock full of information regarding virtual communication, on-camera communication, really communication across any platform. So if people are searching for answers, they probably will find them there.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll put links to all of your resources in the show notes so everybody can get to it. So this has been really good, Karen. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all this information. And just for everyone to know, the book is Suddenly Virtual, Making Remote Meetings Work. And it's now on sale. So pick it up. It looks to be exactly what we need right now at this time. So it's a perfect book for the conditions we face right now. So thank you for coming on the show and thank you for sharing all of your insight and wisdom.
John, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure is mine. I really enjoyed it. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast? Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to Electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.
Are you a fan of classic cinema or a young person who wants to discover the best films of all time? Do these legendary movies still hold up?
On the Generation Film Podcast, two guys who grew up when movies dominated the culture share a great film with a panel of young movie lovers and see how it plays for today's generation.
We discuss changes in storytelling, styles, representation,
the making of each film, its initial reception, and how its meaning has changed over the years.
Join us as we explore cinema classics across generations on Generation Film.
Electricast.